Mullinger Meets Canadians is brought to you by the Halifax Partnership. Hello, I'm stand-up comedian James Mullinger and the co-founder of Edit Magazine. This is Mullinger Meets Canadians, the podcast where we meet Canadians who are making waves on the world stage. In this episode, I'm meeting renowned architect Omar Gandhi, who left Ontario to study architecture at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. In 2012, at the age of just 30, he founded Omar Gandhi Architect, his own design studio and architectural practice in Halifax, a city that he says is the perfect place to start or grow a business. His unique vision and far-reaching insight and creativity have led to some of the most blisteringly stunning developments in North America, both commercial and private. He's the recipient of many awards and distinctions, including being named one of Monocle magazine's 20 most influential Canadians and one of the top 20 young architects in the world by Wallpaper magazine. Most excitingly, Omar is part of the winning team of the International Design Competition to work on the new Art Gallery of Nova Scotia and Waterfront Arts District. Today, I'm meeting Omar on his new rooftop patio in the north end of Halifax in the days leading up to the big announcement, and I can't wait.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, man. How are you?
Great to see you, man.
Good to see you.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you for coming over.
Like, you obviously grew up in Brampton. What was it that brought you to the East?
You know what? I think like a lot of people who live in the suburbs or live in a big city, I was actually just looking to get out of the Toronto area.
Right.
And so I decided to come out here for school back in 2001.
Right.
But didn't really know much about the East Coast at all. So it was a bit of a gamble. But I think that was the motivation at the time, was to really just get away from there.
That's amazing to have that foresight also as a young man, because often people have that. And you mentioned, obviously, this is an amazing place to bring up your son.
Yeah.
But the fact that you wanted to study here, what was it about the course at Dal that attracted you? And also, why architecture?
Well, For architecture, I studied art growing up, and I went to a regional art school. So there was a real focus of the visual arts for me.
Yeah.
And then I think it was really about picking a career that, you know, could take advantage of some of those skills that also would probably appease my parents. So, you know, it was like, you know, certainly pushed a little bit by my dad, but I thought it was an awesome idea right off the bat. I went to the University of Toronto first, and then at that point I was just dying to get out of there. So, you know, I ended up coming here because it's an old school, it's really well known, and kind of known for making things, you know, like you get your hands dirty in this school. And so it was, you know, I didn't know what to expect, but, you know, it by far exceeded my expectations, and the rest is history.
Amazing. I mean, what was Halifax like then? Because of course, I mean, it's obviously grown since then. And what were your first impressions when you got here as someone that had obviously grown up in a much bigger city and arrived here not knowing anything?
I mean, it's a place with a lot of history, right? I mean, there's a richness to that history. And I think the deeper you look, that kind of, you know, the quality and texture of that history is that much more beautiful, especially about the histories that we don't learn in school. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the longer I stayed and the more I invested, you know, time-wise into learning about things, it became a more beautiful place, for sure.
So true, and I love the fact that you mentioned that, you know, essentially architecture was a way of doing a creative thing, that an artistic thing, that because it's obviously physical things, it's also an industry. And of course, then in 2010, you kind of added entrepreneur to your list of things when you set up your own firm. What kind of led to that decision? And that's an incredibly big thing to take on.
I got laid off.
Right.
Yeah, man, I got laid off.
That's always the best thing for a lot of people.
Exactly.
It's the push that we need.
It's the push, right? And it was like a combination of being laid off, but also not wanting to work anywhere else.
Right.
And so it certainly was the plan maybe way down the road.
Right.
But for, you know, that time, it was really just, I think, a little bit of anger. You know, I wanted to prove myself I could do it. And also just about survival. There's like a pride side of it too, right? You know, like I can, you know, do this. But, you know, I was doing really, really small, insignificant jobs at the time. You know, like, you know, it was significant to me, but, you know, decks and little, like, additions, and, you know, I was working for, like, a draftsman for a little while, like, doing odd jobs for the first year or so. So, you know, I think it was really when kind of bigger opportunities, you know, to me at the time, although they were still, like, quite kind of modest, I just wanted to kind of nail everything that came my way.
And that's always the key to success, I mean, anywhere, but especially in the Maritimes, I find, is wanting everything that you do to be great, regardless of what it is. And I think one of the things that possibly gets lost when people read about you now, and they read about all of the awards and all of the plaudits and all of the media that you've had globally, is the fact that you started, this was not, none of this was handed to you, you started there and you built this up bit by bit from doing decks through to these colossal projects now.
It was real, and I would say that I'm, like, fairly conservative in terms of taking chances. And so, you know, it really was about staying in my attic, and then eventually a really, really small space, and then eventually a student helped me. And so it was very incremental, because I think I realized early on that financial control is a huge sort of asset in creative fields. I didn't want to owe money. And so it was really just as much as I could afford to do was as much as I did. And just sort of, you know, took it one little step at a time. But then things obviously ramped up fairly quickly. But I think that was just because we saw opportunity in little things that others maybe didn't.
Interesting. I mean, it's interesting because a lot of the time that you hear, when you hear people talk about starting out, and of course you say that, you know, in some ways you were cautious or risk averse, and, but then other people would say that starting your own firm is a huge risk and responsibility. Where do you think, or what advice would you give to someone kind of starting out as an entrepreneur, say in the Maritimes? How do you get that balance right between taking risks but not basically being stupid?
What's a good answer to that one?
I don't know. Well, you did it.
Like, it's weird to kind of look back and kind of think about advice because I was terrified the whole time. And so I think, like, a huge sort of, you know, driving force behind everything was just complete fear. Except for one thing. I didn't ever fear design or putting myself out there. And I think that that was because I went to art school and you kind of do that all the time. So, you know, insecure about every aspect of my life except design. And I think it was because I realized really quickly that the best work here and the stuff that I think translates the best is the most honest work that tells a story about a place.
So true.
And so it's not trying to be something else.
And that's, maybe that is that's the answer. It's be terrified. Because because do it, but be scared, because that's the thing that, it, as you say, drives you forward, but it means that you are also being smart and cautious at the same time. And as you say, I mean, you want each project to have a story. And this is the thing that I've always loved so much about your work, is that it stands out. You also know when it's an Omar Gandhi project. Like now, I mean, for me, as someone that's followed your work for a long time, I can... But it never... Even though it stands out, it never looks out of place. How do you... and what is your relationship like with the surrounding areas of the places that your beautiful projects end up? Because they always belong, but they always stand out. And it's a fine line.
You know, I think in terms of belonging, it's it's really taking the time, whether it's here or it's in a neighborhood in Toronto or or in kind of the mountains in BC. It's about really understanding a place. Being terrified of being sued. So really understanding the elements and, you know, the things that you need to actually, you know, pay attention to. And then in terms of, you know, it standing out, we just have an enormous amount of fun. I would say, like, kind of childish fun in the office, where we often think of the architecture as something anthropomorphic or a creature, you know? So it's almost, you could imagine it coming to life.
I mean, this is why I'm so excited and curious to see the creative space, because I know, I mean, you work with so many amazing people, but basically, I mean, the geography of Canada and indeed the world is, it's like it's your playground. And you can put your mark on it. And as you know, I mean, there's not many, you know, I guess it's one of those things that even as someone, for people who aren't even necessarily, you know, you know, architecture obsessed,
yeah,
they will go out of their way on a holiday to go and check out one of your, whether it's a home or whatever yeah. it is, just to see it in its natural space.
And I hope that, you know, the experience of seeing it in person
yeah.
is better than seeing it in photos.
Right.
You know, because you get a sense of the scale and the craft and sure. some of the things that you don't necessarily pick up.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a few of our projects, for example, Rabbit Snare Gorge, mm. you know, part of the reason that project makes me really happy has nothing to do with awards or mm. any of that kind of stuff, mm. because I really take that kind of jazz with a grain of salt.
Right.
Just makes people really happy.
Yeah.
You know, like you look at it and you can't help but smile.
Well,
right?
you've received selfies of my wife and I in front of Rabbit Snare yeah. Gorge, and it's not easy to find. It's not easy to find. And it was like the first thing we did when we got to Inverness. We're like, where is Omar's Rabbit Snare
yeah,
Gorge?
Right.
And we sent you a selfie of
yeah,
yourself, and you
amazing.
Can see the smiles on our faces.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of takes you back to being a kid and
does.
Just being excited,
yeah.
right? You know, you know, these memories sort of come back to you. And I wouldn't say that it's like a conscious effort to do that.
Yeah.
I think it's us just being a little bit childlike.
That's yeah. nice. So can I ask how you approach the creative process of any project?
You know, I think first it's about meeting the client,
right.
you know, and kind of trying to get to know them a little bit. And, you know, I would say also deciding whether or not it's a project where, you know, we see an opportunity,
right.
right? Whether it's with the land or with the ambition of the client, mm-hmm. you know, it really has to sort of align.
Yeah.
We say no to a lot of work.
Yeah.
So I think those things need to sort of, you know, come to life. But, you know, once we do agree to take it on, it's about spending some time on the property and really understanding, you know, what's important, the views and the climate and,
yeah.
you know, the surrounding area and the materials that they use.
Mm.
But then I'd say that the other part is finding a peculiar sort of edge to it, right?
Right? That's you know, what you do.
Yeah,
that's
what I
yeah.
do. So whether it's in a rural area or in the city, mm. I always sort of think of our projects as being related to what's around it. It's just sort of like the weird sibling, right? Like it's related, but it's definitely kind of different and odd in
right.
some exaggerated way.
Yeah.
And I think that's it, right? Like if it's an opportunity to do something like that, tell a story.
That's amazing. I mean, like this is
yeah.
this is the different special sibling on this street.
Exactly.
Right?
You know, it's taking, you know, traditional materials, but then doing it in the most sort of Darth Vader-y kind of way where people don't understand what they're gonna see inside. It's gonna surprise them.
You
know,
right.
it's that sort of surprise and awe and, you know, laughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is everything. I mean, what about one of my favorites, a project like Rabbit Snare Gorge? How does
yeah.
that come about? And then how does the initial conversation transition into it happening?
Yeah, you know, one of the things about architecture I find mm. is the way in which architects often like to portray the experience.
Right.
I've never really tried to push that. Like, it's not like the hand of the genius or anything like that. It's like a lot of people trying to come up with something. And you know, in our studio, we try and hire the smartest people
right.
who are critical about everything, including my own work. So at that time, it was brought to us by a group of recent grads out of New York.
Really?
They
wow.
were related in some way to the client who's from New Jersey.
Right.
And so they were kind of scouring the internet to find someone local to work with, and liked our project, The Moore Studio.
Right, which is,
yes.
which is also absolutely unique
Thanks.
And beautiful, yeah.
And so it was then about, you know, we were designing it on one property and then it kind of moved locations and it was Ooh. About kind of taking advantage of these crazy views and telling a story about the property.
Right.
The property was sold by a guy who had lived there. You know, it was in his family for like 300 years or something.
Wow.
And he explained that this was a place where as children you would learn how to snare rabbits. It wasn't like suitable for farming or anything like that because it's got valleys and a waterfall and a cliff. And it's like the most,
yeah.
you know, fun place for a kid, but completely like useless for anything else.
yeah.
And so we took that. That's where the name came from. But
Amazing.
It ended up becoming, you know, a property where a variety of little projects ended up going. And, you know, years down the road, when I taught at Yale, I brought my students from Connecticut up to Cape Breton, and we toured, and basically the project was set on that property to do a summer camp for kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's just like a place where, you know, again, it's where things come to life.
Yeah.
And so the name of that course was Where the Wild Things Are.
Right.
But it, again, it's about these little creatures. So, you know, in terms of the process, again, it was really understanding where the building was going to go, but then really kind of drawing peculiar things like that hoop over the entry,
right, which
to
is
tell
just,
a story.
Yeah, which is the thing that just, one of the many things that stands out so much about that, yeah, as not only just something that people wouldn't expect to see on Cape Breton Island in Inverness, yeah, in that strange location, but also anywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, right. That would be, yeah, it would be unique wherever it was.
And again, that was the product of collaboration,
right,
you know, with these kids in New York, mm, and with Peter Braithwaite, who, right, worked for me at the time.
Yeah.
And so we worked very closely on that together.
Amazing.
In our really young studio. So, you know, the best things come from people working together.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, one of the things is you came to the East to study, and then what was it that you think that kept you here? Because lots of people come here for many different reasons.
Yeah.
What was the thing that that really kept you? And I know you are you're a global company, and I know you have offices in Ontario, but you yourself choose to be based here.
Yeah.
What is it about this place?
Well, I did leave after school with my fiance at the time, and we lived in Toronto for 3 years, mm-hmm, and then a job actually came up for her.
Right.
And so we were married then at that, mm, point, and we basically came back here, because she was given a fantastic job. Mm. And I went to work for the local firm, and, you know, was there for about a year. So really, it was a family decision to move back, but one that didn't take much to convince me.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you find is the, what are the benefits, and indeed, if there are any, the things that are different about doing business in the Maritimes to doing them in Ontario, or indeed in the States or anywhere else?
Well, the landscape, obviously, but, you know, it is different. Mm. I can say now, after several years of having our Toronto office, when people are building something over here, it's a really special time in their lives.
Yeah.
And I'd say there's a lot more trust, and that maybe there's even a belief in design.
Wow, yes.
You know, it's a very different experience. It is, there's no other place I would have wanted or could have built this practice.
Right.
We get a lot of leeway here, and a lot of, I think, people have belief in our work and the process.
What are your favorite places to go and favorite things to do here in the Maritimes?
I feel like I'm experiencing it more. I'm biking a lot now, so I'm, you know, kind of learning about places like that. But I'm kind of spoiled with our job, right? So I flew to St. John's, Newfoundland for like 6 hours to have 3 meetings. We're doing 3 houses there.
Oh, wow.
On like the most incredible, mind-blowing properties you can imagine.
Yeah.
You know, I've spent a lot of time at Cap Palais this year in New Brunswick. You know, I'd say that one thing that is tough is, you know, there's such a beautiful collection of old bars and restaurants. Mm. Tom's Little Havana was my favorite, and I feel like through school, and, you know, that's been gone now for some years. So you sort of mourn the loss of developers, you know, buying properties and, you know, getting rid of these things. Mm. But, I think I'm just learning more and more about these places, for sure.
So your studio is down on the Halifax waterfront, which is obviously a beautiful spot, but what is it about there that made that the natural space for your creative minds?
I think, like, you know, for, you know, the time, it was about finding a place where I felt like we could be messy.
Right.
You know, it was it was affordable. The pier area, the area that we're in, it's, you know, it's been filled with artists for years. So there's a lot of shops and, you know, banging and clanging and, you know, like a lot of people making things. And so, you know, it's in proximity to NASCAD. There's also like such a rich history about the place. It's part of the Pier 21 complex. Mm-hmm. And so the building we're in, it's actually called the Immigration Annex, where when people pass through, they would have been processed through this building. Mm. So there's, you know, such a significant history to it. But honestly, it's been amazing being in that area. Yeah. There's a real culture. It's sort of outside of the downtown core, has a bit of an industrial vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing spot.
Sounds gorgeous. Should we check it out?
Let's do it.
That'd be nice.
show is brought to you by the Halifax Partnership. Halifax is very much open for business and offers key advantages for business growth and success. Visit halifaxpartnership.com for further information on how you can improve your life and business by moving to Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Wow, this is awesome. You obviously have you have this beautiful space in Halifax. You also obviously have an office in Toronto. Yep. What do you like about having a presence in both cities?
Well, I mean, I love, you know, being here. You know, this is home for me now, but it's what's nice about being back there is that's, you know, where I'm from and my family and, you know, a lot of my friends. And it's just kind of the complete opposite. So I would say it's sort of a complementary fit.
Nice.
But this is home, and this is where I'd say, you know, there's a real sort of generation of ideas, and it's a great place to think. I think also by being away every so often, because I typically go back and forth every 4 or 5 days, although not during this time right now. But, you know, when I land, I'm so excited to be home, even after just, you know, 1 week. So I'd say that it was like a perfect time to feel like a reinvigoration of love for this place.
Beautiful. And, and it's one of those things, I mean, you get the best of both worlds. You obviously have lots of clients in both places and elsewhere. I know one of the projects you're working on right now is with our mutual friend, Matty Matheson, who is always singing your praises. What's he like to work with, and what can you tell us about the project?
Well, I mean, as soon as the project started, they ended up, him and his kind of group of partners ended up renting the spot right next to ours in the same building. And so he's kind of in our office all the time, like on our couch, lying down. And he's one of the sweetest people I've ever met. So I would say that, you know, when he's performing or when he's, you know, out in front of people, he's like ramped up to this level, but he's a really kind of gentle guy, really sweet, you know, family man. So I think he appreciates that, you know, our office is a place where he can just sort of have a nice conversation.
That's nice. As you say, he's an incredibly thoughtful man.
He is.
So with a project like that, I mean, his cooking style is very unique, and everything about that is unique, and everything about what you guys do is unique.
Yeah.
So how is that kind of, how does that kind of fuse together?
Well, he certainly is well versed in architecture and art. So, you know, he's a really smart guy. He brings a lot of ideas to the table. He travels a lot, and so, you know, it certainly was about our vision, but at the same time, you know, he really is, I would say, a pretty involved client. You know, he has some really special ideas and sees it through. So, like, he's very rigorous. But, yeah, he's been working. It's been several years now that we've been working with him. So hoping to open the restaurant soon. But, yeah, it really, you know, he was involved, right, all the way through.
Wow, can't wait. That is, that is, it's like my two favorite things combined.
Exactly.
An Omar Gandhi project and a Matty Matheson restaurant in one. That's the dream. And what else are you working on right now?
Well, we're working on projects all over the place. So, you know, we have a cottage we're working on in the Okanagan. We have three projects just outside St. John's, Newfoundland. You know, a variety here in Nova Scotia. We have a handful in cottage country in Ontario, one in Oakville, the restaurant. We have a municipal building we're doing in Lunenburg right now. We have, what else do we have? We have, you know, we're obviously pretty deep in the competition for the Art Gallery of Nova Scotia right now. Part of a huge collaboration on that.
Which looks incredible, by the way.
Oh, thank you. It was just, it was an amazing experience, a huge thing to be a part of. But just, you know, the people involved. Our team was just unbelievable. And then we also have some projects in the States. So in Michigan, we have a few projects that are hopefully starting construction soon. One in the Catskills, upstate New York. So we're kind of all over the place and kind of, I would say, changing the kind of work that we do and focusing a lot more on public work.
Interesting, because I mean, this is one of the things that I was thinking when you were listing those was the incredible diversity of them, both geographically, but also in terms of, you know, what they are. And I know you kind of, you for many, many years, you've been at this stage where when clients come to you, essentially, you're interviewing them. It's not the other way around. Like, you're screening them. What are the things that you look for in a client to make you decide we're going to go with them?
Yeah, you know, and it's become a bit more like that, I would say, right? Yeah, you know, it's apparent whether or not it's a fit, you know, pretty soon.
Yeah.
Really, they have to be open to going on the journey.
Right.
You know, like it's a ride for us, and we don't know where it's going to go. And so it's got to be someone who I think it's going to be a special thing for them, and they want to join us for the ride.
Right.
You know, and so I think that's it. And I don't think everyone is suited for that.
Yeah.
It's got to be fun as well.
Right, that's
you know?
The key.
Like, if it's not fun for them, it's going to, you know, it won't be fun for us.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this looks fun. This looks like the kind of fun. What can you tell me about this?
Well, this is a cottage. It's called the Jib House.
Wow.
It's perched on a piece of land on the southwest corner of Chester Village for an amazing client who, you know, is a real supporter of the arts. And it really has a 270-degree view of the ocean. So you're looking out at individual islands.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Hey, do you want to go see it?
I would love to go see it.
We can go. Let's
go. Oh, my God, you're joking. Let's do it. Let's go. Well, first of all, wow. I mean, how do you even begin a project like this?
Honestly, it takes an amazing client.
Right.
It takes an amazing client and a property like this, right? So, you know, sometimes when you draw your wildest sort of fantasies on paper like this, sometimes it ends up happening. And it really takes a client who's really interested in pushing the envelope, telling a story, but also not afraid to do something a little bit different than what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, I mean, this is the dream. Tell me about the inside.
Well, you actually enter, obviously, on the other side, and the profile of the house, it actually feels very much like the buildings that are surrounding it. You know, it's very wide, but it's low, because you're almost entering at grade. You're actually entering on the top level.
Right.
When you go inside, you then navigate a circular wood stair, very nautical, that takes you down into the living room, and you see two stories of glass looking out at this insane view.
I mean, and that is, as you say, so it's a world-class view, world-class property. I mean, what is the, how would you even describe the design inspiration behind something like this?
You know, again, I think that it's really about, you know, abiding by certain traditional principles and pushing it as far as we could. So, you know, we have cedar shingles on the roof, we have cedar shingles on the wall, we have limestone on the wall. So it's a very mid-century palette. That really becomes sort of gray-toned and very soft in hue over time. So on the one side, it's, you know, it's colossal, but each of the compartments of the house itself look out to different views so that depending on where you are, you're experiencing a different part of the landscape.
Wow.
So then there's the pool house at the end of the pool. And the entire glass wall opens up so that it becomes almost an extension of the landscape. Around the back side, you actually have a red cedar open slatted shower. So you walk inside and you get to the back and it's open to the air where the shower is.
I mean, there must be times with projects like this that you just think, I'm gonna keep this for myself.
Well, there are no projects like this, right? I mean, it's a thing all in its own.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really think that with projects of this scale, or budget even, I think that, you know, typically it tends to veer towards a traditional aesthetic.
Yeah.
So this is really sort of taking a bit of both worlds. It's really modern, it's very clean, but it's also warm.
Yeah.
It really just takes a client who's really willing to kind of go down that road and really trust in us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, and then, so it becomes your client's, you know, oasis.
Yeah.
But it's always your baby. And I'm trying to fathom, like, how you've mentioned all of these other projects you're working on and all of the things that you have, obviously, in your portfolio. Yeah. How is your brain divided up with all of these babies all going on at the same time?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, we have different project architects working on different ones. But at the end of the day, even when we, you know, hand the keys over and they move in, of course, we're friends with the clients. Yeah. But, you know, we get to keep that little model in the office. So there's a little bit of it that we get to retain, I think. But
that's the little baby part that you get to kind of own forever.
Exactly. But, you know, periodically we'll get messages from our clients and say, you know, they had an experience or had people over, and you know, they're, you know, just as excited as when they moved in.
Right.
And you know, I mean, it's a pretty amazing feeling.
Yeah, must be. I mean, what can the rest of us learn from this kind of design aesthetic, and how can we kind of, you know, take what you do and this mindset and improve our own homes and lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what this says is there's a kind of modern architecture that relates to the work and kind of environment that surrounds us, something that, you know, is appropriate for the climate and uses local materials, but at the same time, it's pushing boundaries.
Right.
You know, it's really kind of telling a story that's cutting edge a little bit, I'd say.
That's beautiful. What advice would you give to an aspiring architect in Atlantic Canada looking to further and grow and build their career in this region?
Well, a few things, I think. One is it doesn't start with this,
right?
You know, I was doing decks and little renovations for, you know, a draftsman for the first year or two and little renovations inside. And then it escalated, of course. But I'd say, you know, be selective. You know, make every project your best project. Do the best that you can with that. But also tell a story about this place. You know, it's an amazing place. And people around the world, they want to learn more about it. So I'd say, you know, through the architecture, we tell stories. We tell a larger narrative through the materials and the forms and the people who live in there. I would say that connect it with, you know, the Atlantic provinces and kind of its deep history. I think that's how you really kind of make the work as accessible as possible to a wider audience.
That is beautiful. And that could also apply to almost any creative medium.
Yeah.
That is amazing. I can't thank you enough for this amazing experience.
Yeah, man.
And, I will see you back here in a year for the
grand opening
party. Yeah. Yes. Let's live that dream. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mullinger Meets Canadians. If you like greatness, creativity, being inspired, laughing, or just love Canada as much as I do, then this is the podcast for you. So please do subscribe and review the show now. This show is brought to you by the Halifax Partnership. Halifax is very much open for business and offers key advantages for business growth and success. Visit halifaxpartnership.com for further information on how you can improve your life and business by moving to Halifax, Nova Scotia. To learn about Omar's incredible Art Gallery of Nova Scotia and Waterfront Arts District project, follow him on Twitter at Omar Gandhi and on Instagram at OG_architect. Further details can be found on the Edit website, maritimeedit.com, and I will see you next time.
Podstarter.